Episode 26, Night Living Dreads podcast. This week we're going to discuss, we got a few horror news articles to discuss, and as well as one, hey, did you know that your DNA loves horror? That's right, we're going to talk about that, as well as some haunted destinations coming up as the weather gets nice. Stay tuned, Night Living Dreads starts now. Episode 26 of the Night Living Dreads podcast. I am Otis D. Dreads. Chirp. Anybody hear the crickets? That's right. Your buddy, your pal, Otis D. Dreads, is flying the Insane Asylum plane solo. But no worries. Hey, we got a good show tonight. Before we get into what we're going to talk about this evening, we have to give out some Facebook love. That's right. We got to give our love out to, first and foremost, my fellow hounds, Gore Hounds of Horror on Facebook. Check them out, man. They have a group that is a closed group, which just means you ask three simple questions about horror. Now, it's not like a trivia thing, you know, and a couple of the questions have to do with conduct within the group. So it's really simple. I mean, you know, just pretty much don't be a dick. but anyway, check them out. They also have an open group over there. See what I did there? Open. got an open group over there as well. You don't need to answer any questions if questions are not your thing. But I highly suggest this. Malice, myself, Mrs. Dreads, who you may have heard on a podcast or two in the past, all of us are over there. So, really cool place to hang out. If you love horror, it is the best damn horror group on Facebook. But it's not to say that the next in line is not one of the best damn horror groups on Facebook, or is on their way to becoming, and that would be, and I hope I get this right this week, because last week I did not. I got a couple of the words backwards, and so hopefully I get this right now. Misfit Horror Fiend Club. I hope that's right. I really should have double-checked. But anyway, another great group over there. They are also fans of the podcast, so that always makes them right up there in my book. Plus, great bunch of people over there. There are some familiar faces that you will see if you go over there, and I suggest that you do and become a member. You will see some similar familiar faces, I should say. And names and people that are also over on Gorehounds. Another one horror-related Facebook group that I and Malice are members of, and that would be the After Dark Facebook group. Check them out. And look, if you just want a laugh, if you just want to wake up, hit a little bit of the ganja. Hey, come on, we're all pot friendly here in the Insane Asylum. but if you want to laugh, and you got a little buzz going on from old Sweet Leaf, there's only one place to go if you want to peruse Facebook, and that is Cannabis Arcade. Cannabis with a K, arcade spelled just how you were taught in school. That is also another one. Hey, and don't forget, the Living Dreads, Dreads with no A. We are also over there on Facebook. So, yeah, I mean, if you're just, you know, bored or whatever, you know, and you just want to, you know, look at something, we're there too. All right, we're going to start out. I got a good show lined up. It was almost a last-minute thing. I was, you know, I this is a day late in coming out. I almost just took the week off, and it bothered me. I didn't want to do that, and there was some things that came up in some horror news that, I wanted to discuss. One being, okay, we got some new movies coming out this year. Some I am looking forward to. One being Pet Sematary, which comes out here in just a couple of days. The 5th. I believe that's Thursday. I have a date with Mrs. Dreads, and I believe my son, Little Dreads. Neither of the two have dreads. I'm the only one, but... I believe that is the plan for Friday. So Friday night, movie night, going to see the new Pet Sematary. That's one I'm really looking forward to. But there's also Chucky. Of course, Three from Hell. And I'm sure numerous other ones that you know I'm missing. But we're gonna, you know, go in on this Child's Play. Came across an article, and I had no idea up until today who was going to do the voice of Chucky. Already knew it was not the original actor. I don't have his name in front of me, but it was not him who was going to play the voice of the infamous Chucky. Well, it turns out, ladies and gentlemen, all you Star Wars fans are going to be quite happy and maybe geeked about this. Emphasis on geeked. No, I'm not shitting on Star Wars, man. I'm not. But Mark Hamill, good old Luke Skywalker, is going to do the voice of Chucky. Now, a lot of people already didn't like the idea of this. And one being Don Mancini. He was really perturbed by the whole reboot, because this is a reboot of the original. Now, how did the director, Tim Holland, of the original Chucky, going back to 1988, how did he think... What did he think, I should say, of Luke playing Mark Hamill, doing the voice of Chucky? Very simply, in a tweet, smart move with a thumbs up emoji. Now, this is one of those movies that I was not really looking forward to. To sing, honestly. I'm going to check it out. But it's not like what you would call on the top of my list when it comes to horror movies to view and ones I'm looking forward to. This was not one. This was probably closer to the bottom. As I mentioned, I'm a huge Rob Zombie movie fan, and I don't care who doesn't like them or whatever, it doesn't matter. I am, for one, so I'm anxious to see, you know, what Three from Hell holds for us. I'm anxious to see what Pet Sematary holds for us, a reboot of an old movie. Now, With Pet Sematary, I guess, you know, the trailers really enticed me. Right from the get, Malice and myself covered this a little bit, a few podcasts ago. and we talked about the new Chucky and how the new Chucky looked compared to the old Chucky. And that already turned me off. And the fact that none of the original cast, what was going to be a part of this, which I thought would be kind of cool in some way or another. So this wasn't one I'm really looking forward to. But, and there's always a but, I'm kind of a little more looking forward to this, given the fact that Luke Skywalker is doing the voice of Chucky. Because that just that intrigues me a little bit. You know, I mean, how's he going to sound? Is he going to be able to pull this off? Because, well, honestly, I'm sure we all can agree. And as I've mentioned on other podcasts, I'm not the, you know, huge, you know, Chucky guy. I thought it was more of a, you know, a fucking comedy than it was anything. And I feel the same thing about the Leprechaun movies. They're just, yeah, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I was just never a big fan of them. So, but now I'm kind of a little more intrigued. I want to see, again, how Luke Skywalker sounds as Chucky. So, hey, I guess that's something for us all. And for you Chucky fans out there, I'm not trying to shit on, you know, your favorite horror villain. I, a lot of people shit on Mikey. That's mine. I'm a Myers guy. But hey, that's all right. It's all in good fun. Don't worry. Hey, I would love to actually see this movie, be somewhat decent. I like it to be better than the original. Wouldn't that be cool? That's kind of hard to do, but that's kind of how I feel maybe this new Pet Sematary is going to be. And again, that'll be out Thursday, April 5th. All right. Now, I'm also a big, as well as Mrs. Dredds, and I think probably a little Dredds, Dredds Jr., that I mentioned, my son. Well, we're all kind of, you know, Twilight Zone fans. And I don't know how many Twilight Zone fans we have out there, but I'm sure you guys, if you are out there, my Zone fans, you've probably heard about Jordan Peele, you know, doing some of these Twilight Zones now. He is the voice. He is Rod Serling. And Serling. I had to look at my notes here, people, okay? Again, flying solo, so please excuse that. But let's get right back into this. CBS All Access, okay, which apparently I don't subscribe to, you know, apps like that. But apparently they're pretty confident in Jordan Peele's reboot of some of these. Now, I don't know if this is all the episodes are going to be kind of reboots of old Twilight Zones, which I'm not against. I'm not against reboots, although reboots track record doesn't, you know, hold a whole lot of water in my opinion. But I'm still not against them, and I believe that the one, and U.S. residents only. Sorry if we have any hounds or misfits from Canada. Sorry, this doesn't include you, but U.S. residents can watch the first Twilight Zone on YouTube for free. I watched it earlier, and I have to say, it's not that bad. I thought it was actually pretty fucking good. And it's in a new series. I guess he's doing, you know, a series of this. It's called The Comedian. And The Comedian, it says, give The Comedian a spin at your leisure at the top of the... Oh, never mind. I didn't mean to read that. It's based on an episode from the original Twilight Zone, which, you know, fans know. You know, it ran from about 59 to 64. And it was written by the series mastermind Rod Serling. Peele's reboot It has a few stars, none that I'm very, you know, familiar with, but CBS has a lot of a lot of confidence in this. And honestly, if you are a Twilight Zone fan, I think he did a pretty good fucking job. I'm actually looking forward to seeing another episode. Twilight Zone is one of those that for me and Mrs. Dreads, that is, it is one of those go-tos where you have no idea what you want to watch. Boom, Twilight Zone. There it is. And so I saw this. Yes, I liked it. So, but that's just my opinion. Check it out. I'll have all the links on here in the description of the podcast, which will be over at nightlivingdreads.com. Now, the next article that I want to get to here. I'm, you know, like zombie movies, I've never been huge into, you know, they didn't really scare me. Well, movies, horror, you know, type movies that are, you know, supposed to scare you or whatnot, you know, about sharks never really bothered me. But there was one. There's that but. There's always a but, and there's always one, it seemed, that got me. And that, of course, was Jaws. Now, that came out in the 70s. I was a youngin. Some of our fellow hounds may not have even been born. But if you happen to live in the Austin, Texas area, boy, are you in for a surprise. Well, if you're in the Austin area, you may already know about this. This summer, you can watch Jaws sitting in the water for the fifth year in a row. This is something they do there in Texas. And that's awesome. And it says that, let's see here. It's at the, let me skip down here. Tickets to these on-water shows include full access to Valente Beach attraction, which includes a lazy lagoon, the Sidewinder, the water slides, and more. Keepsake sharkified inner tube. Fireworks display and the thrilling one-of-a-kind experience of watching cinema's greatest great whites with your feet dangling dangerously and deliciously in the water. That Jaws scared the shit out of me. It really did. And as a child, I grew up on the East Coast, so I don't know if we have any East Coast hounds, but Ocean City was a place that I frequented on a yearly basis for quite a many year. When I was a child, and going out on the beach in the water, yes, I mean, any little thing that touched me had to have been Jaws, a little piece of seaweed, Jaws. That movie really invoked a lot of fear and a lot of anxiety when it came to going to the beach like Ocean City or you know, wherever. And you know, it. I'm sure you guys have, you know, somebody out there listening to my voice, my lonesome voice, would probably have maybe similar experiences with that. But would that not be one of the coolest things to do? They set up a big movie theater. Well, not movie theater, movie screen. Set it up on the beach. you have your little inner tube and you go out there probably, you know, so far. I mean, you want to be able to see the damn movie. That's part of the experience. The fact they're playing Jaws, if you can't see the movie Jaws, it kind of defeats the purpose. But, and you're sitting there in an inner tube, dangling your feet. I cannot remember the name of the lake. Let's see. Tickets. It says tickets have not gone on sale yet. But the resort, it's the Valente Beach Resort on Travis Lake. So they say that the resort's official website announced that the event will take place every Saturday except for July 6th, beginning June 8th and running through August 17th. So plenty of chances, and I envy you people who are in that area, because that would be something I would absolutely love to be a part of. To watch Jaws sitting on an inflatable inner tube, you know, your feet dangling in the water at night. Come on, what could be better, I guess? I don't know. With that, we're going to take a quick break, and boy, what a break I have for you guys. This guy is a dear friend of mine, and the second part of the show, we're going to talk about some places as the weather gets nicer. You want to get out more, and those who are like me and like to go out and check out spooky places when the weather's nice, the next half of the show, if you happen to be in the Pennsylvania area, a couple of our admins who started this awesome group called Gorehounds of Horror, they live out in Pennsylvania. So it was kind of, and I've been out to, a place, Hillview Manor, actually, out in PA. So there's a lot of some haunted attractions if you're into that kind of thing. And I'm going to talk about five of them after this break. But when I went out to Hillview, this guy, Knowledge, also goes by the name Blaine Hard. You can find him on Facebook as well. He came out. He's you know, out East Coast guy, Maryland guy, and he came out, and we all got together, and we did a little ghost hunting, and it was a good time. I have hung out with this guy. I've done radio shows and podcasts with this guy before. I think, you know, this is kind of maybe what some people may say would be, you know, what I look like I would listen to. this guy, he raps. And I'm going to tell you what, man, this is one of my favorite songs. And he's got quite a few albums out. KnowledgeIsHipHop.com. is his site. Check this out. I'll be right back right after this break. Again, we're going to go to the mothership. KnowledgeIsHipHop.com, RebelsAdvocate.com. We'll be back.
Feeling right at home when I'm in my zone. That category 5 cyclone that flows inside my dome will lead to destruction of microphones. Reciting these poems, my life in autobiographical form, I let it be known. I'm smoking this dab and I start to float into places unknown. I'm up in the sky with a bird's eye view, looking down at the globe. Convictions of innocence out of control, losing my grip on that mind that I own. Got no friends, so I'm riding alone, hoping of paying a visit to intergalactical planets through visions. Feeling the clearance of body and spirit, closing my eyes and react to the prisms. Different colors in the atmosphere, or maybe this molly just has me that lifted. is as real as a fiction. Whatever it is, I like the existence. It's a beautiful twist. When that music hits, I don't feel no pain. An adrenaline rush that I can't explain. Ain't holding still, I can't be tamed. That's so for real, no candy rain. I call it fun, you call it strange. And I'm fully automatic when I bustle. What you call a gun, I call a bang. Bottom line, we are not the same. I travel through time and space, trying to find my ways in reality. All my brushes with death have painted me more life in this picture I see. And I'm calm like a bomb in the palm of a military man in army fatigue. Lost boy from Never Never Land, it'll never land. My mind is on a mothership, and it's leading me back to the place from which I came. It just explains we are not the same, we are not the same. My mind is on some other shit. I'm afraid that it can't stop the turbulence on this plane. This will not change. We are not the same, we are not the same. My mind is on a mothership, and it's leading me back to the place from which I came. It just explains we are not the same, we are not the same. My mind is on some other shit. I'm afraid that it can't stop the turbulence on this plane. This will not change. We are not the same, we are not the same. So I'm up and down the coast doing shows, roasting competition. Not to mention that the life I'm living, it is not forgiven. Got to get in where I can get in, and no, I'm not forbidden, cause these sloppy spitters wanna stop me from getting any shine that I be getting from these rhymes I spit. Never mind all these fine ass dimes I hit. Special high, special trees on some bonds I shit. Special guys, special needs, now rewind my shit. Finished that and brought it back, whipped it up and call it crack. See the fans fiending for dope tracks and all of that. Bo Jackson in the industry, and you know that the only reason I've been in these streets, cause I chose that. So act up, get popped like Prozac. Stepping on the toes of your folks like flow mats. I hold the weight of a whole state on my own back. Shoulder blades won't fold, won't break, won't crack. Thought I showed them that and told them that'll shoulder crack. If there's a crown to the underground, then I'm holding that. And I don't wanna hear no shit back from no broke ass, no flow, having ass rappers that I'm going at. Instead of rapping about a gun, you should've loaded that. Cock it back and aim at your foes and then unloaded that. Pop, 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 like a bitch up at the bar doing shot, shot, shots until everything is going black. Closed caskets are known to happen when you really live a life like you hoes be acting. And that goes for rappers trying to pose as trappers. Everybody knows you broke and you get no action. Your clothes and fashion stole from fags, and so I gotta sit and question how you blow for that but can't blow for this shit when they know we ripping any competition from the East Coast in half. The picture's painted beginning a brain that's attempting to escape reality. But the truth in the booth or the truth in the streets is all you're ever gonna see out of me. And I'm as calm as a bomb in the palm of a martyr or a suicide bomber can be. The last of his dying breathing, though it's inside of me, best believe. My mind is on a mothership, and it's leading me back to the place from which I came. It just explains we are not the same, we are not the same. My mind is on some other shit. I'm afraid that it can't stop the turbulence on this plane. This will not change. We are not the same, we are not the same. My mind is on a mothership, and it's leading me back to the place from which I came. It just explains we are not the same, we are not the same. My mind is on some other shit. I'm afraid that it can't stop the turbulence on this plane. This will not change. We are not the same. We are not the same.
Welcome back, Night Living Dreads podcast. I am Otis B. Dreads, and I hope you enjoyed that little ditty. Again, that was a, you know, a good friend of mine, Knowledge, and the name of that song was Mothership. You can listen to that one as well as all the other ones. KnowledgeIsHipHop.com, just how it sounds. RebelsAdvocate.com, now that's spelled a little different. Rebels is spelled R-E-B-E-L-Z-A-D-V-A-K-I-T is advocate. RebelsAdvocate.com. And you can also find Rebels Advocate on YouTube. And listen to a lot more. That came from the album 21 Grams. And I know a lot of you may think that has to do with drugs. But it doesn't in this case. You'll have to go and listen yourself to find out what it does have to do with. Now, I know I mentioned in the beginning of the podcast that we would, you know, talk about the fact that some researchers believe that our DNA actually loves horror movies and loves that feeling of fear. Now, one of those doctors is a Dane, or researcher, I should say, is a Danish researcher, Matthias Claesen, C-L-A-S-E-N. And he has stated that it may seem a little, well, he doesn't say this, but it may seem a little bit odd that, you know, someone could find entertainment and joy in something as horrible and disgusting as some of these horror movies can be. But Matthias here has claimed to have come up with an explanation to why this happens. It's, you know, the desire for good thrill, like that fear of being, you know, or that sense of fear, that feeling of fear, it's in our DNA. And we're also going to get, I know there's a lot of zombie fans out there and in Gore Hounds of Horror on Facebook. I know there's a lot of Walking Dead fans. What evolution, apparently, according to this guy, has taught us to fear zombies, which is interesting. We're going to talk a little bit about this as I cherry pick through this article. Now, he has stated, when our ancestors, this is Matthias, when our ancestors lived as hunter-gatherers in East African savanna, it was important that they were prepared for possible attacks by predators and vermin. Now, predators could be animals, they could be other human beings, but they lived that way all the time. Now, they said they had to train their reactions to stressful situations, and the desire to do so became stored in their DNA, which we still carry today. Now, when we watch a horror movie, we're satisfying that desire. We're training our danger preparedness. That I find to be very interesting. So basically, we don't have those primal fears that maybe our ancestors had to deal with when it came to you know, predators and this. We have our own kind of predators now in 2019, but not so much like they did. You know, they're very, very much, you know, less civilized than we are. So now we, you know, we watch these desires, these things, you know, that were so prevalent with our ancestors, to where they came in contact with a lot of this fear and this terror, and this they're always looking over their shoulder, but they're always prepared. Regardless, they would outlive most horror movies now, but they, you know, we now don't have to deal with, you know, some of the same fears and reasons to prepare that they did. Now, I guess that feeling, and we're not really talking about a feeling, more as we're talking about that DNA. That DNA, it becomes kind of dormant to me. To where it's like, yeah, you're kind of exercising that fight or flight, that preparedness. that we get from a horror film. Now, he also goes on, as I mentioned, he goes on to, talk about how evolution has taught us to fear zombies. And I'm going to read a little bit of this article verbatim. As the first researcher ever, Matthias has conducted an in-depth study of how our fascination with horror may be linked to human evolution. He thinks it's obvious that our fascination with horror is genetic in some way or other. We know that most of our genes are still adapted for a hunter-gatherer lifestyle, like one our distant ancestors lived. It was a life filled with threats and dangers, the same thing that we find in a horror movie. I mean, if there's no threats and no danger, I mean, why are we watching this? What is it then? It's not a horror movie. It goes on to say, for many, many thousands of years, our ancestors lived on the savannah, where caution was the key to survival. For instance, being disgusted by rotten, disease-causing meat is a safety reflex. We don't even have to think about it. We just know that's bad. We don't have to think about it. We don't. Well, why is that meat that has flies gathering around it and smells like death? Why should we not eat that? We don't have to ask ourselves these questions. We already know. And again, it goes on. If these people wanted to avoid being eaten, they had to fear lions and other sharp-toothed animals. As a consequence, according to Matthias's theory, the fear of rottenness and sharp teeth has become a part of our genetic material. This is why we are now scared of vampires with pointy teeth and zombies with rotting carcasses. It's an interesting theory. It really is. And I think this is all Matthias is doing. At this point, is taking and theorizing. It goes on. I'm not going to go through this entire article because got some haunted places. If you're residents there in PA, got some haunted places to maybe check out. Here, as the weather breaks, horror teaches us. This is back to the article. Horror teaches us to deal with our fears. Okay, today we're unlikely to run into a ferocious lion on our way to the supermarket. Yet deep within our DNA, we still have a need to prepare ourselves for a fatal lion attack. Now, I don't know about you. The last thing I'm thinking of when I walk across the street to a speedway is being attacked by a fucking lion. Okay. Now, I get what this guy is saying. And maybe we're not thinking, in terms of a lion. We're probably thinking, all right, well, that guy looks a little fucking shady, I mean, this guy's acting all weird. He looks hopped up on some fucking heroin or something, I mean, those are the kind of fears that, I may run into. Not in my neighborhood, but yeah, those are more today fears that I would have, but not fear of being eaten by a lion on my way to Speedway. So I don't know. Now he goes on to say, when we watch a horror film or read a scary book, we're acting out this desire to exercise our fear response. Now, this I can get into, okay? Because this gets into why are we even, why do people like to be scared? Why do people do this? Maybe it's something that, you know, we're not conscious of. Now, Matthias does say, quote, "It's actually just like other mammals young who fight for fun because it makes evolutionary sense later on in life when they need to fight to the death," end quote. That makes sense. Because if anybody who owns a cat or have owned a cat know that this is what you know they do. Dogs do the same things. Maybe it varies from breed to breed, but I believe dogs do the same thing. They play as if they're training, as if they're still in the wild, because it's a part of who they are. Now, the last little bit I want to get into with this article, he says, "We use fiction as an emotional simulator to broaden our horizons. Horror fiction exercises our reactions to what's terrible and frightening." And I think that's a great way to end that article, only because it really speaks volumes, I believe. Think about this. Watching a horror movie, whether it you know, physically scares you, whether you jump, whether you scream, whether you do this or that, whether you know it or not, and I've been one to say that, yeah, a lot of horror movies don't really scare me anymore, but I guarantee you there are changes biologically going on as I am watching this, even though I don't consciously feel, oh, I'm scared, oh, there's somebody there's somebody here, you know, I still, you know, there's still going to be things that are going on that have changed. So I don't know. With that, I thought that was a really cool article, and you know, I wish I could have, you know, done more on it, because there's really a lot to talk about when it comes to really the psychology behind fear and wanting to be scared and what happens when we get scared and why do people like it so much. So, as you can see, it's a rabbit hole that my time does not allow me to have. Now, with that being said, there are people out there like myself who, when the weather gets nice, I don't, you know, think about going to, you know, a whole lot of beaches or whatnot, unless Mrs. Dredd suggested, and then I better give it some serious thought. What myself and Mrs. Dredd do like to do, though, that we can both compromise on and we both enjoy, and that's doing a little ghost hunting. Now, I know that at first, you know, when you say that to people, I go ghost hunting. Oh, what are you, a fucking Ghostbuster? No, I'm not a fucking Ghostbuster. No, I'm going to have, for one, fun, to be with some close friends and to go out and try and capture something that maybe I can't explain, or through some research can't explain, or science can't explain, or whatever the case may be. And normally going, obviously, to places that have history of maybe some paranormal activity. Now, if you are like me in that aspect, and you possibly live here at the Insane Asylum, is, you know, based here in Ohio. So if you are in, you know, the Ohio area, if you are possibly, hopefully maybe in the Pennsylvania area, Kentucky, any of the surrounding states here, kind of in the Midwest a little bit, especially Pennsylvania, you're going to like what I'm about to get into, because we're going to talk about at least five of some places that have been known to have some paranormal activity that just has some really mysterious history to them, which actually is kind of the first one, that being the Dixmont State Hospital. That's a little northwest of Pittsburgh. Now, this was a mental hospital, and it's since most of it, from what I'm understanding, it has been demolished. It was closed due to lack of funding. There's tunnels underneath this hospital that seem to go for miles, some say. And again, being a mental institution, a whole lot because I kind of had to throw this show together kind of quick. So if you know more about, Dixmont State Hospital there in Pennsylvania, well, feel free to let me know. But it has a weird kind of mysterious aura to it from what I've been told anyway. And here's one that, as soon as you mention the word Gettysburg, when it comes to ghost hunting, there's been some pretty compelling video footage out there. Now, I know a lot of skeptics, and hey, I'm one. I don't go into these things thinking, I'm going to catch a ghost. I'm going in there trying to disprove whatever I think I find. That's just how I go into it. And then, I'm kind of hoping deep down inside I am, shown otherwise that maybe I saw something that was paranormal. But the Jenny Wade House, and this is in the Gettysburg area. Now, this house has, and Jenny has an interesting little history. This house happened to be located, I believe it was 1863. There was a huge, bloody, bloody three-day battle that happened between the Union soldiers and the Confederates. And in the middle of this battle happened to be a little brick house. Brick house. Not that brick house. And in this house lived Jenny Wade, which was actually not her born name. I think she was born Mary Virginia Wade. She was also known as Jenny Wade. But her sister Georgia, and her brother-in-law, Louis, and as well as a couple babies, a niece and nephew. Oh, look at there, sirens. Just adds to the drama, I guess. Now, from what I've gathered as far as the living arrangements in this house, but there was also Susan, who owned the house. But the way that I've gathered it, it was almost like Susan, the owner of the house, had one part of the house. She was renting out part of the other house, which is where the babies and the brother-in-law and sister and Jenny resided. So there happens to be this battle, as I mentioned, between the Union and Confederate soldiers. There's a big clash. It was a three-day battle, that happened right around the beginning of July, again, lasted just 3 days. Now, here's the strange thing. During this battle, or before the battle, everybody, Jenny, Georgia, all of them, Susan owned it. I don't know if I mentioned that, but Susan owned this house. So, as a landlord, she's told, look, you guys, you're living here, it's probably not the best thing for you to stay here, considering we're going to have a big clash here, I believe, and you're going to be right smack dab in the fucking middle of it. Susan thought, hey, great idea. I'm out. Jenny did not, as well as Georgia, and I'm assuming the brother-in-law and the niece and nephew. Jenny and Georgia, what they did was they started baking bread and passing out water to the Union soldiers. Now, there was an instance, because you may be thinking, if this is right smack in the dab in the middle of it, you know, was the house hit? Well, yes, one time the house was hit by a cannonball. This cannonball did not explode. Okay, I mean, there was nobody died in that. There was no real injuries, nothing. But there was a fatal day for Jenny, and that happened to be July 3rd, 1863. And they say it was a stray bullet. They say a Confederate soldier was in a neighboring house. I believe it was up in the attic. Shot. Stray bullet. I've heard it went through a door, went through two doors, hit Jenny in the back. She died while baking bread. It became so touching to the Union soldiers. And again, this is in the midst, you know, the battle's coming to an end, but it's still a little not so safe to try and carry a corpse to give them a proper burial. Recently deceased to a proper burial. It was kind of hard to do at the time. There was still a lot of, you know, fighting going on. So what had happened was they put Jenny down in the cellar, and they laid her there. There were even troops that were guarding her body, making sure that it was not, because they, you know, she stayed behind and then did what was thought to be such a patriotic thing, blah, 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 you know, passing out water, you know, feeding soldiers, you know, bread and giving them whatever. So when the fighting subsided, she then, Jenny, was moved by her mom and some soldiers and was buried at Gettysburg National Cemetery with honors. So I can only imagine that there was a military-type presence there when she was buried. Now, here's the thing before we move on. Jenny was the only direct civilian casualty of that battle. And it happened to be a stray bullet. So, again, the Jenny Wade House, that would be in Gettysburg, and of course the first one I mentioned, the Dixmont State Hospital northwest of Pittsburgh. You can Google all of these and, you know, find out where where you can find them. Next on the list, Pennhurst State Institution. This again was brought up by one of our awesome admins. Miss Amy had brought this up in a little group chat, and I started looking into it. And what you find when you look into Pennhurst State Institution, and again, I can't go on a big, you know, rant about this because we have a few more and time's a ticking. But what you find is torture, is eugenics, which was pretty much the cornerstone of Pennhurst, eugenics. And it was only through an inquest of the practices at Pennhurst that led to their shutdown in 1987. There's an old documentary, and I cannot remember the guy's name who did the documentary. He was a young journalist at the time. I believe still does, I guess, investigative type segments on the local news. He did a little documentary. It's heartbreaking. There were a lot of children involved. There were, you know, a lot of just torture, just heinous acts, such as tying residents to the bed. Again, children, sometimes teenagers, tying them to the bed for days. And they're laying there in their piss and shit. This was not a good place to be. But yet the public had a different kind of, you know, feeling about this because of them dealing with the whole eugenics and that being their cornerstone. Any undesirables were, you know, taken out of society, and they were kind of the society's little safe haven. Give us all your undesirables, and we'll tie them up to beds and make them piss and shit themselves, and we'll torture them. But society will be okay because they won't fucking be out there with you. We'll take care of them in here. And for a lot of people, this seemed to be a plausible solution if they happen to have a mentally retarded a sibling, you know, whatever, family member of whatever. Let's take them down there, because that's what Pennhurst started doing. They started just taking in people. Come on in, come on. And they're thinking that they're going in to get help. And then as soon as those doors shut, your property at Pennhurst. And what a lot of those people that went to Pennhurst found is that a lot of time you don't get out. There are there's some really, really good interviews that the gentleman who did the documentary, I believe it was back in the 60s, did the documentary. He caught up with some of the residents, old residents of Pennhurst, and a couple of the former residents actually ended up getting married. It's a really beautiful story, so I would encourage you to maybe check that out. But Pennhurst has quite a name when it comes to the paranormal circles, let's just put it that way. Of course, we can't talk. We did mention Gettysburg, but the battlefield itself. And, you know, you can go to some of these tours that you can get. And, of course, they take you out, you know, during the day, and they show you all this. You know, it's not what you'd call really an investigation when you know, from a paranormal sense, but that there is one place, and I'm gonna do a little bit of research and find this, because this was a group that I just came across maybe about a year or so ago. And what they do is they take you, because the cemetery closes at dusk, from what I'm told. All the tours stop, blah, blah, blah. It closes at a certain time, and when it gets dark. This place will take you out there where the general public, I guess you could say, the general pop tours will not take you. And they'll do it at night. And, you know, from what I remember from reading on the website, there, you know, some seasoned investigators, if you don't have equipment, EVPs, things like that, you can borrow theirs. They have extra, and you can do your own little investigations. So, I'm going to have to do a little bit of research on that, but I thought that would be something really cool. On Gettysburg Battlefield, and in that general area, there's three houses that have seemed to, you know, rise to the top of paranormal activity when it comes to Gettysburg. One being the George Weckert House. Before I go, and name the other two, the George Weckert House, as well as the other two, a lot of these houses at that time that actually were in the way of, the battle, a lot of these houses were turned into makeshift hospitals. So if there were injured soldiers, your house was turned into a fucking hospital and you were made to take care of them or whatever the case may be. They took your house to, take care of the wounded. The Hummelhaus House, I think I'm pronouncing that right, that is said to be a local legend, as well as the Rose Farm. That was another infamous field hospital, which had its own burial ground. And they said that hundreds were actually buried at the Rose Farm. Last on the list, Eastern State Penitentiary. This was abandoned in 1971. Housed some pretty well-known people, one being Al Capone. There was a pretty famous bank robber, Willie Sutton, who in 1945, while being housed at Eastern State Penitentiary with the help of 11 other inmates, and over the course of the year, managed to dig a 97-foot tunnel undiscovered. Nobody knew that shit was going on. 97-foot long tunnel. They were working to get the hell out of there. Willie Sutton, he was there. And this place, when you look at pictures of this place, which this is very much on the top of my bucket list for haunted locations, because this place, just, you look at the pictures and it has kind of an eerie feel to it. You can almost feel it just by looking at pictures. It's they almost have, it was designed to, kind of have the feel of a church. And when you look at the big, the archways and just how it's set up, you almost get that feeling. In fact, in the cells, they would have, one glass, window, I guess you could say, it's called a skylight, where you get one little ray of sunshine that comes down. And it was told, it was said that, hey, this skylight is to represent the eye of God looking down on you. And that you don't be mistaken, you're being watched everywhere. But this place was not so loving in that fashion. I think that's kind of creepy anyway. But some of the guards and counselors, they actually came up and designed a regimen of physical and emotional, psychological torture. And they would have different ways of doing things for different infractions. For one, they would take prisoners out during the winter months, whatever the infraction was. They would take them out, dead of winter, and douse them with cold water, naked. Here you go. Maybe they weren't naked. Even so, you're standing out there in your little jail scrubs and you're getting water, cold water poured all over you outside in the middle of winter. It was things like that. They would also, this was weird, they would chain and put a chain somehow on their tongue and connect it to their wrist. Now, what this did was, however this chain was configured to their tongue, if they were to struggle with the chains, it would tear. It would start tearing their tongue. That's pretty fucking brutal, if you ask me. Other things they would do was they would strap prisoners to the chairs and just leave them in, you know, just complete silence for, you know, days, months. And if you've done any looking into, which I have a little years ago, into what things like my last, one of the last things I'm going to bring up, some of the worst cases got the hole. And when you talk about putting somebody in a hole, that's called the shoe or the hole, is when you're talking about isolation in that fashion, you know, just simple isolation, not being strapped to a chair, or, you know, you can at least move around in a little room, but even so, that isolation has huge impacts on a person's mental stability. But hey, I'm no Dr. Phil, my friends. Hey, that's going to bring this episode, that being 26 of Night Living Dreads podcast, to a close. Again, a quick rundown. Gorehounds of Horror, Misfit Horror Fiend Club. We have After Dark, Cannabis Arcade, Cannabis with a K. And, of course, Night Living Dreads. We are over there on Facebook, Dreads with no A. NightLivingDreads.com is where you can find this podcast as well as all the other ones that we have done. Check us out, Facebook. Hey, thank you guys for tuning in. Sorry I had to listen to so much of me. It's been a while since I've had to do a show by myself. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Stay tuned next week because, hey, like I said, Friday, this Thursday, actually, is the opening night, I believe, the new Pet Sematary movie. I'm going Friday, and this coming week's podcast, I'm going to do a little review. And hopefully, I am not disappointed because I got big, big high hopes on this movie. So stay tuned for that. Hey, thank you guys again for listening, and I will talk to you.
Things no one knows. We're going to die.